As one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the reservoir of everything, including all knowledge, all truth, and all contradictions. The example cited here is very appropriate. A rope is one truth, but some mistake it for a snake, whereas others know it to be a rope. Similarly, devotees who know the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not see contradictions in him, but non-devotees regard him as the snake-like source of all fear. For example, when Sringadeva appeared, Prahlad Maharaj saw the Lord as the supreme solace, whereas his father, a demon, saw him as the ultimate death, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.237, Vayam Dutya Vinivesitasya, fear results from being absorbed in duality. When one is in knowledge of duality, one knows both fear and bliss. The same Supreme Lord is a source of bliss to devotees and fear to non-devotees who have a poor fund of knowledge. God is one, but people understand the absolute truth from different angles of vision. The unintelligent see contradictions in him, but sober devotees find no contradictions. Om Gyanakimandasya Gyanana Sakya Shakshurimitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurudeva Sri Chaitanya Manomandasam Sapitam Yena Uttalei Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svaparantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Once I was driving in the Himalayas with a van filled with devotees, and I was the driver. And next to me, the mountain was dropping 3 kilometers. So I was driving on the edge, kind of perspiring a little bit. And at one point, one of the devotees said, "What a beautiful view," meaning the white snow caps and so on. And I said, "Yeah, what a beautiful view." So it is all relative. Our position of perception is relative. And perception is the key to reality. It is actually, the poet said, everything has the color of your eyes. Whatever way we look, depending on our outlook, we will perceive things. And one will perceive things as full of threat and as full of danger, and another one will feel totally secure in the hands of the Supreme Lord. Prahlad Maharaj is an amazing example, because Prahlad Maharaj was not only fearless, Prahlad Maharaj was so absorbed in remembering the Supreme Lord that he was blissful even under extreme circumstances, even while thrown in a pit with snakes. Prahlad was still peaceful and remembering the Lord. And considering that if death may come, then it is the will of my Lord. Then it's fine. So from a transcendental perspective, there is no advantage and no disadvantage. There is only advantage. And there's only advantage. Therefore, sometimes we hear that anyone who is in the temple will make spiritual advancement. Even one who's sleeping in the temple right now during the Bhagavatam lecture is still making advancement. So it's auspicious that he's sleeping in the temple, at least that. And that's the perception of the devotee of Mahaprabhu, who sees that anyone and everyone who's part of this movement always makes spiritual advancement. So then, in this movement, there is only advantage. There is no question of any disadvantage. So the normal function of the mind, of the conditioned soul, is sankalpa, vikalpa, weighing different situations. Is it nice? Is it not nice? Do I want it? Don't I want it? Maybe, maybe not. Shall I take it? What's the price I have to pay for it? Is it worth it? And so on. Well, and now I let it go. reject it. Or, yeah, I've got to have it somehow or another. Accept it. Accepting, rejecting. Sankalpa, vita, vikalpa. The mind is accepting and rejecting in so many situations because we see some things as good and some things as bad. It is only the topmost devotee, the very topmost devotee, who has that kind of Pandita Samadarshina, that completely equal vision, who can see all circumstances as perfect, and who can see that everything is a perfect arrangement of the perfect Lord leading to a perfect end. And such a devotee is perfectly peaceful and is in the topmost category of Krishna praying. Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is describing that even in Bhava, a devotee is still experiencing some klesh, some suffering. Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in his Nectar of Devotion, as Srila Prabhupada translated it, has described three types of devotional service. He describes sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. So sadhana bhakti means devotional service in practice, in cultivation, when we actually don't have any real love for Krishna. But when we are practicing our devotional service, A, due to mercy of the Vaishnavas, B, mercy of Krishna, and C, due to transcendental knowledge, because the eyes have been opened, Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyanandasya, by the torchlight of transcendental knowledge, by the spiritual teachers. Then we say, yes, I will practice this devotional service according to rules and regulations. So that involves struggle, that involves overcoming the mind and the senses, which want to go in a different direction. Then the next stage of bhakti, which is described by Srila Rupa Goswami, is bhava bhakti, devotional service in ecstasy. And the final stage that is described is devotional service in pure love of God, totally motivated by love of Krishna. So then the question is raised by commentators as to what is the difference between bhav and prem? What is the difference between devotional service in ecstasy and devotional service in pure love? Isn't it the same? And Srila Rupa Goswami says, yes, bhava is prema suryamsu. He said it is like a sun ray of love of God. So then it's love of God, maybe in the sun ray, in like a first ray of light. In other words, what is the difference between bhava and prema? Is it only a difference in degree? Is it of the same nature? Is it both love, but is in prema that love matured and compared to the sunlight at noon? And at bhava, sunlight at dawn, just prema suryamsu, a little ray of the sun. Is that the only difference? No, that's not the only difference. So it's not only a difference in quantity, it is also, there's a qualitative difference. And Srila Rupa Goswami explains, the qualitative difference is that in bhava, one is still experiencing some hindrance, some suffering. And why is it so? See, the Rupa Goswami has said, because there is some remainder of the reaction of Vaishnava Bharat. And then in praying, all those reactions are cleared. And then in praying, there is no more obstacle. When one is full of love of God, one sees no obstacle. At that state, truly, all duality is gone. Because everything is simply the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And absolutely perfect. And one is just relishing and appreciating how amazingly intelligent Krishna has arranged everything. And see, see the conditioned souls, they turn away from him, but to no avail, because everyone is walking my path anyway, Krishna says, no matter what. Okay, according to surrender, according to surrender, certain facilities are given or denied. But everyone is walking the path of the Lord. No one can be on any other path, because every path is a path of the Lord. That doesn't mean that that all these paths are nice. And there certainly is what has been described the royal road to hell. And that's also there. That is also a path of the Supreme Lord. It is ultimately also part of a facility. Just as it is said, Sarvasya Chahamri Sarivisto Matasmiti Janama Boganascha Vidaisya Sarve Aham Deva Vijo Vidantakrit Veda Vidivacham. The Lord who is in the heart of all living beings, Matasmiti Janam, he gives remembrance and forgetfulness. So sometimes if we desire to forget the Supreme Lord, he will help us to forget him. But that's dangerous. Therefore, it is dangerous to play with Maya. Because the Lord will not so quickly let the devotee forget him. Because the Lord feels indebted by the service the devotee has rendered. So even if a devotee has a flirtation with Maya, the Lord is inclined to still try, to still keep on trying from within the consciousness. Nasyami atmabhava sto. Atmabhava sto means the Lord is situated within the consciousness. And within the consciousness, the Lord will still steer the devotee towards him. Te samne manakam partham aham ajnana janta maha. Nasyami atmabhava sto jnana nibeda vasvata. The Lord shines with the knowledge, with the lamp of knowledge from within. This is one of the chaturthi sloki of the Bhagavad Gita, one of the four key verses in which the whole knowledge of the Gita is contained. And in the purport to that particular verse, Srila Prabhupada is describing the devotee who is receiving good instruction from a bona fide spiritual master and then not paying attention to it and not following it. And it says, then the Lord will make either arrangements to enlighten that devotee from within, and if that doesn't work, the Lord will make arrangements to enlighten the devotee from without. First some knowledge comes from within. So, I have a feeling that maybe this is not right, what I'm doing. Possibly. Maybe Krishna doesn't want it. Would it be? That's just my mind. That cannot be. That's just my mind. It's okay. I'll just do what I want. And then that truck came around the top of the corner, and then the light went out, and then when we opened the eyes, it was in the hospital bed. And so it was like, and then the relatives sitting around with flowers and like this. And then suddenly it dawns upon us. Te sam devanukam partam aham jnana jam tamana siyami atmabhavastu jnanti peda rasvata. He was shining with the lamp of knowledge within, but then I didn't take it. Then it came from without. So like this, maybe my example is just a little, a truck. Anyway, it's not very creative. I couldn't think of something more creative this morning.
A bus.
Well, I used to live in a house which was on a side. There was a sidewalk and you step out of the door and then traffic was right there and buses would actually come by at like 10 centimeters from the nose, right? And we would just stand there very peaceful, thinking it totally normal. Because that's city life. Right? a huge hunk of metal flies by in front of your face, and you just stare through it totally as if it does nothing. On the middle of the white line between lanes of traffic flashing by, totally peaceful. That is illusion. That is the illusory energy. That is when we think that everything is perfect. Jaya. The Lord is coming in many forms and ways to us. But a devotee is always seeing Krishna. Stavra jangana dekina dekitara murti saradhoi istariva spurti. Because the devotee sees deeper. The devotee looks behind. Here is a bus. But how can this thing move? Dead metal. Dead metal. How does it move? By spirit soul. It's by spirit that everything moves. And by living entities who move this metal. And where, and who moves these living entities? Then we come to the Supreme Lord, the Prime Mover. We come to the Lord. Everything, all living beings are emanating from Him. As many sparks are emanating from a fire. And like this, we see everything leads back to Krishna. So we see everything leading back to Krishna, and in that way we always see Krishna everywhere. We see everything. So we see deeper than the surface. The surface may look very tempting. Ah, beautiful green grass. Ah, let us sit and have a picnic. So peaceful, so lovely, so nice. Not entirely. Imagine for a moment you would become small. Suddenly that grass has turned into a jungle. And in that jungle, there are animals that are dressed up like tanks. Like ants. You know. And one walks over the leg of another. And you're sitting there, give him another piece of pizza. So peaceful. So that peacefulness is also relative, actually. I mean, for the insects, it's not so peaceful there in the grass at all. So, the grass itself, it's not so nice to be grass in a way, because you just gotta take it as it comes. Right? You can't do anything about it. And when it's ice and snow, then you're frozen grass and you can't go inside. And we came from behind the window, turn up the heater and say, boo, it's cold, let's have some hot tea. And the grass just has to tolerate and be frozen. In the hot sun, that the grass can only go brown, and the grass gets flooded in the rain. Grass is tough. It's hard. These trees with frozen branches stand there in the winter. Too much snow, the branches break. Not easy at all. Not easy at all. And come to anything. When we look at it like that, the material world is just dukkhalayam asaswatam, a place of suffering. But then, when we look at it transcendental, more transcendental than that, when we look not just at eternity, we're looking at eternity, in comparison to that, the material domain is a place of suffering because everything is temporary and then breaks down. That's too much. But if we look at it from yet a more transcendental perspective, everything is perfect. Everything is wonderful. Because it's just an ocean of mercy. Everything is an arrangement of mercy. Behind the illusory energy, there's Krishna. There's Krishna. Iramdaya tatrena satyashvitam mukham tattvam pushanna bhavi nu satyadharmya drishyate. Even behind Brahman, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, even in this material world, there is endless variety. Sometimes it is said, there is the spiritual energy, antaranga shakti, there is the living being, tatastha shakti, marginal energy, and there is the material energy known as maya, the bahyami shakti, the external energy. So it is said, Vumya Bhunaru Vayu Kamaruchi, Evacha Amukraniti and Vinakrapiti Astana. Eight material energies. These are my separated material energies, earth, water, fire, air, ether, my intelligence, force, Krishna speaking in the Gita. Then Krishna says in the next verse, Aparaya mita stranyam prakritim vidive param jiva bhuta mahabhavidam dhamvite jagat. He says that, and there's also the superior energy of mind. And those, that energy are the living entities, superior to this material energy. And they are exploiting the material energy. So that's what the living beings are doing. But if the living beings are the superior energy, then why is it that the living beings become controlled by Maya, by illusion, by the material energy? Why is it? Sometimes people say, well, if Krishna consciousness is true, then it must work. Then why do you have to practice so much? Why do you have to rise early in the morning? Why every day you have to chant? Why you have to study your books and do all these things? And if you step over the line, you'll fall down. Why? If Krishna consciousness is the truth must prevail. So it is stated. How about that? Good question. The truth must prevail. No. Maya is very powerful, more powerful than the living entity. Why? Because Maya has unlimited temptations. Why does Maya have unlimited temptations? It is because the material energy is the reflection of the spiritual energy. Pratibimba. Because it is the reflection of the unlimited spiritual energy, which is unlimitedly attractive, even the reflection is very attractive. And therefore Maya is so strong. Because it's reflecting the spiritual energy in the whole spiritual reality. And therefore Maya is almost irresistible. That it is very hard to deal with Maya. Therefore, on our own, by determination, we will not make it. Therefore, determination, no matter how strong, cannot last. I will not do it again. I promise you. I'm so sorry you fell down. I promise you I'll never do it again. Crocodile tears to no avail. Because that doesn't work. No one can conquer Maya by the decision. And now I shall not do it anymore. By a promise. And I promise for the rest of my life I will follow all these rules and regulations. I promise it. To you and to myself and to everyone. And I believe it because I want to believe it. No, it doesn't work like that. Daivi is a gunami, mama maya virati amamevi, papalyante mayamitam karantite. Only by taking shelter. By taking shelter of Krishna at every moment, again and again. Only then, by turning to Krishna, can we rise above. Because Krishna is after all, the attractor, the all-attractive Supreme Lord. Only when we are attracted by Krishna can we be saved from Maya. Otherwise, as soon as we are not taking shelter of Krishna for a moment, then the mind starts to think, well, that looks nice. But when Krishna is there, in every relationship, then it changes. Just like we have endless relationships. Living beings are always in relationships. There is no question of being alone. Alone at last. Not alone. We have a relationship with a place. In Belgium. Brought warm clothes. Good. And that's right. get that brother. Yeah, just like home, Belgium, rain, cold, fresh, few hot days in between. In relation to a place, Italia, la dolce vita, the sweet life, Italia, holiday times, Italia, what are we going to eat? Tomatoes, of course, and cheese, lots of cheese, yeah, Italia. Nobody worries about his blood pressure in Italia. We got the other problems than that. So we are in relation. We are in relation to a place. When on top of the Eiffel Tower in Paris, we sort of look down and in relation to a look on a scale of heights. Eiffel Tower, we are in relation to places, in relation to people. Oh yes. She is a young, she is a beautiful, he is handsome and prince-like. We are in relationship with people, and accordingly, we have a mood of behavior. So all these relationships, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Vedam yad pratyet and apratyet acatmani tadvit atmanomayam yadotama yadovasa. All these relationships are to be judged in relation to Krishna. So this is there's always the third party. The third party, Krishna, is in every relationship. And his purpose is what counts. So there we are. There is Krishna. So, between a man and a woman, Krishna is also there. Then, the relationship can work. And if Krishna is there, and if the relationship is meant for coming closer to Krishna. But then it's not so simple. Then it means taking responsibility. Then it means not just exploiting. Remember, the condition, so yayenam daryate jagat, is exploitive. I like the girl today, but I'm not sure if I want to get married, so I'll be engaged. Or we first need to live together, to try it out, to see if it works. That means I'm not sure if I'm going to take responsibility. I'm not sure if you're nice enough, so I have to test you for at least a year to see if you're really nice enough, then we're going to live with you for the other years. No responsibility. Selfish, self-centered, exploitive. That meant exploitive mentality. No. Just say, all right, we come together, and together we'll go towards Krishna. Otherwise, forget it. Otherwise, misery loves company. That's what you can paint on your house. If there's no Krishna, you can paint on your house. Misery loves company. It's Krishna that actually makes it all positive. It is Krishna where we make advantage, where we make advancement in life. It is Krishna. Because wherever there is Krishna, there is eternal benefit. Did you ever go to a party before Krishna consciousness also? Never. You know these kind of parties. The people, oh yes, it's a party, they have a good time, and then you forget something in the party, and the next morning you go back to pick up your coat or something, like, and the smell in the place of the party. It's like, was that the place where it looked so magic last night? God, this thing's so bad this morning. Just like the headache that I'm having now also, left over from that party, and so on. So, the illusion of enjoyment is totally destroyed. But in Krishna consciousness, whatever we do, there is the eternal dimension. So, Not only Ari is the pizza and the pasta offered to Krishna and tasting very nice, but you're also making eternal advancement with every bite. You see, every bite is especially nice. In this way, we are. It becomes so auspicious that eternal spiritual dimension is always there in every situation. If we remember Krishna as the third party, but when we don't, immediately anxiety begins again, even for a devotee. Just a little detour, ooh, here we go, on a slippery slope. Anything can happen anytime. I'll end with a story. Once we were going from Radhadesh here on a bus tour through Scandinavia, organized by Mahaprabhu. And I was asked to go along, you know, to add a spiritual touch. Anyway, Mahaprabhu drove us up to the north. They were coming to Scandinavia, and he's showing videos of polar bears and, like, you know, Antarctica type of scenes, right? And then it starts, you know. You get these emperor penguins, these big ones, you know, like huge penguins. And it shows how the penguins are living on the ice and how they lay their eggs, right, before the winter. And then both the male and the female take turns sitting on the eggs, very correct, you know, very correct. And then the winter comes, and all the ladies go to the south. And it's the man that sits on those eggs throughout the cold polar night at minus 70, braving the polar winds. And then, at the end of the winter, the man, they also go south for a vacation, enjoying their lives on some islands. And then the first rays of sunlight appear. And light is there, and everything warms up, and the eggs begin to warm up, lying on the ice. And the little penguins inside know, summertime. And, you know, and they just break open those eggs, and hundreds of eggs are cracking open at the same time. All these little penguins come out on the ice, and they have these big flat feet, and they wobble a little. And then soon they smell the water. They smell the ocean, and the ice is sloping down towards the ocean. And within seconds, the penguins discover that their feet work really well as skis. And they start to ski down the slope, you know, hundreds of them at the same time. And as they come towards the edge, just sliding down, they fly over the edge, and there's hundreds of penguins are in the air, and just as they are about to plunge in the water, this huge gaping mouth comes out of the water of a kilometer, and he swallows all my penguins. I'm still traumatized after all these years. I mean, I never got over this moment. And so I'm sharing it with you today, because every time I talk about it, I feel a little bit of relief. I'm carrying this terrible movie with me all these years. My penguins, that killer whale just ate my penguins, just like that. Just when they had so much fun. Oh my God, they had so much fun, really. Now, they were so happy. They were so happy, and then this nasty, nasty, nasty killer monster, demon, came and saw them. That's the material world. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. Just when you think it's all great on the slippery slope, slander you. just then. So, it says that when you give a lecture that you have to end it on a high note. So, I thought this might be a good point then to ask a question.
How can one change the nature of a man?
How can we change the nature?
How can one change the nature of a man, the way he has been created? Can an apple become an oak?
How can we change the nature of man? Can an apple become an olive? No. Can a crow become a swan? A crow can become a swan. Although in the beginning, a crow may try to act like a swan and bait the feathers white and walk around like Paramahansa. How can a crow become a swan? Like when the crow stops eating garbage, then the crow is no longer a crow, because a crow means eating garbage. Swan, no garbage. But if one continues to eat garbage, just paints the feathers white, that doesn't work. So the transformation from crow to swan is possible by a process of purification. And that is by going away from trying to satisfy our own senses to satisfying the senses of Krishna. That's what will bring about the transformation. Satisfying the senses of Krishna.
Just like dressing, dress to kill. A ring on every finger of Krishna.
By dressing Krishna. It says by dressing Krishna, very beautiful, one forgets everything about the beauty of the material world. In this way, a man can change. Although the apple doesn't really become an olive, but we can change the orientation. We can, and that changes us a lot. We can change our focus. If our focus is me, then gradually our fingers, our hands become like rakes of the men in the casino pulling the cash. Our eyes become hard and cold. We see others as utensils. Chew them up. Yes. Spit them out. Anything else for me. For selfishness. So when we change our orientation and serve Krishna, then we put ourselves secondary. Put Krishna first. So, but only Krishna. It's only Krishna, but what about the poor starving children? What about them? No, Krishna is the well-wisher of all living beings. So when we love Krishna, and we also have to love what he loves. If you love someone, you have to love what they love, otherwise how can you love? So when Krishna loves all living beings, we also have to love all living beings. So also the poor starving children, everyone. In this way, we change. But our nature is still our nature. Like, I used to be stubborn. Former, I'm stubborn by nature. Very stubborn. I used to be stubborn for myself. Just like, it's my life, and I do what I want. There was a band called The Animals, and they had this song. And I learned that song. It's my life, and I do what I want. So, I was very determined about that. Now, I'm still stubborn, but not for Krishna. Stubborn for no Maya. Forget it. No. You can be very attractive, but no. For Krishna. So, So in this way, stubbornness, if one is stubborn, we cannot change it. But we can turn it around, change the orientation, direct it towards Krishna. If we are a singer, sing for Krishna. If we are a dancer, dance for Krishna. Whatever we are, accountant, be an accountant for Krishna. If you like money, collect money for Krishna, or look after money for Krishna. Whatever it is, if you're shy, be shy for Krishna. This is alright. Shyness also is a good quality. If we stay pure, so our nature is we just engage our nature in the service of Krishna. We don't. But obviously, but you see, it is said man is not only his nature. Man is a combination of nature and culture. And the two grow together so much that you almost cannot separate anymore. Like if you cheat, and you lie, and you steal, and you just screw people, then, after some time, that just becomes part of your nature. And then it really becomes part of you. Although underneath there is something else. There's still the innocent child you once were before you did all those things. So, by the chanting of Hare Krishna, we can get rid of all that artificial contamination, that false ego. And devotional service breaks down the false ego. Then one day, the pure self comes out. And maybe a little different than what we see. Therefore, it's sometimes looked that someone has become a completely different person in the Krishna consciousness. You have changed so much, you're a totally different person. Actually, deep down, I was always like this. This didn't show. Covered by false ego. A false identity which I assumed due to the environment. Now, that is being pure. Like that. Crows turn into swans. Paramahansa, transcendental swans. The swan is chosen as a symbol because I have not done it, but if you throw milk in water, they say that the swan can separate the milk from the water. So if anybody happens to have some milk and there is a swan nearby, try it out, okay? And take a picture, put it on Facebook or whatever, and like the proof, the swan and the milk. That's all they say. Swans can separate milk from water. That means transcendental personalities can separate spirit from matter. And they don't get entangled with matter. Just take the spirit, leave the matter. Like that. Anyway, yes?
Hare Krishna. You speak about material conception of everything. But for you, how do you consider one book, for example?
Only one book?
The book in general, this thing, this instrument.
I'm not sure what you're trying to say.
Because one book, it's how do you consider these things? One
book, a book.
It's material things.
I see. A book is a material thing, sound is a material thing, like that. Everything is Krishna's energy. So, in one sense, everything is spiritual in origin. Yeah? Therefore, material things can also be used for spiritual purposes if we connect them with Krishna. Yeah? Then they become spiritual. Iron put in fire acts like fire. Yeah? If I have a red hot piece of iron, it very much acts like fire. Want to try? It burns. Yeah? Yes. So in this way, whatever is connected, a book in itself is of no use. There are so many rubbish books in the world, isn't it? They kill so many trees for all kinds of endless rubbish books. Just rubbish. But if you write about Krishna, then even a material thing, a book, becomes like fire. It becomes full of transcendental poetry. Everything, when Krishna becomes part of it, becomes transcendental. Even an ordinary mundane relationship between man and woman, when Krishna, in Krishna's pleasure, becomes part of it, then that relationship becomes transcendental. Even just a plain house in the street, when Krishna's deity is in that house and we are serving him for his pleasure, that house becomes a place. Even a castle somewhere in Belgium becomes a temple. How is it possible? It wasn't built for a temple. Some rich man must have thought he was going to enjoy himself in this place. This was probably part of the living room or whatever, where he would receive guests, or the library, or the dining room, or
the drawing room.
Okay, thank you, old chap. Yes. And now, it's a sacred place. Now, we know it as a spiritual place where you go and you get mercy if you come here. Just see. And Krishna becomes part of it. They become spiritual. It's a miracle. Anything, every relationship with him, with Krishna, with the pleasure of Krishna, connected to that thing, and it becomes spiritual. See, camera, microphone, everything. Clothes. For the pleasure of Krishna. So for the pleasure of Krishna and the devotees, we'll end now. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.